Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Active Radio KHII 88.9 FM Podcast. We really appreciate you joining us today. My name is John Hurt, and we're going to interview some of the greatest and most influential minds in our community. By sharing knowledge through our conversations, we will try to impart some information you may need about what is happening in the Tularosa Basin and across southern New Mexico. So let's get to the interviews.
Well, it's time now for our Commander's Corner on this Monday morning, and we're honored to have our guest in here this morning. A special edition of our Commander's Corner featuring Detachment 1, 82nd Aerial Target Squadron from Holloman Air Force Base, a tenant out there. Our guest this morning is the commander of Detachment 1, Lieutenant Colonel Atari Harris. Colonel Harris, good morning, sir.
Morning, Bob. Thanks for having me.
Hey, it's great having you here this morning. Welcome to our studio.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
How long have you been out at Holloman Air Force Base?
So, personally, I've been here for about 9 months now. We got here this summer, and we are absolutely loving it.
What do you like most about it?
The small town has been great. The people are super friendly. It's a great environment for the kids to grow up in. I've got kids in second and third grades. So they're loving school at Sierra Elementary, and we love the outdoor stuff. We got an RV, so we go camping, go up to Cloudcroft, we go hiking, and now we're doing lots of snow skiing.
Very
this
good.
Winter. It's been great.
You're enjoying it while you're here.
Absolutely.
And of course, your kids got that brand new Holloman Elementary School to enjoy as well.
Yeah, I saw that. That looks really nice.
Yeah, very good. Let's talk a little bit about Detachment 1 at Holloman Air Force Base. What does the squadron actually do?
Yeah, so we fly the QF-16, so the drone remote piloted version of the F-16. So it's a full-up F-16, and it can be flown remotely, manned or unmanned. And we use it to do weapon system testing. So they can be shot down while being flown remotely, or just used in weapon system tests for air-to-air missiles or surface-to-air missile testing in general.
Now, is this testing in general, is that done only for the Air Force, or do we work with other branches of the military?
Oh, there's lots of different customer options out there. So with the Department of Defense, you've got the Army, the Navy, the Marines, Air Force that need to do weapon system testing, either air-to-air or surface-to-air. But then we also have foreign military sales customers as well, most notably the Japanese, that come out to White Sands Missile Range each year for about 12 weeks of testing with us.
So that testing is a big part, not only of Holloman Air Force Base, but White Sands Missile Range as well.
Exactly. Yep. A great partnership with White Sands Missile Range. We actually do the remote pilot operations from consoles that are out there at White Sands Missile Range.
Taking a look at the range and the squadron out there, how many QF-16s do you have?
Yeah, so we got a pretty decent number of tails, currently 24, with three of them that have been demanned. So 21 that can be flown manned or unmanned, and three that are unmanned only right now. And when they go to get shot down, they get demanned, so they take the seat out and they do some different configuration things in preparation for the shoot down.
Now, is most of the flights, Colonel, around this area?
So when we're flying them manned, we can fly them just like a regular F-16 wherever. When we're flying them unmanned, it's only over the range, only over the unpopulated areas there on the White Sands Missile Range.
So how can we tell when we look up in the sky, if our eyes are good enough, how can we tell it's a QF-16?
That's a great question. So the orange tail should give it away there on the horizontal and vertical stabilizer on the tail, as well as the wingtips. They're painted orange. If your eyes are sharp enough to see that. However, if your eyes are seeing that, then they're probably not unmanned. And because they're only unmanned over the range there. So if it's flying unmanned, you're probably not going to see it.
Now, when we see these orange tails flying around, at what speed are they traveling? How many knots?
When we go to and fro, generally about 300 knots, which is a nice slow speed there for conserving fuel. When we're doing dogfighting kind of stuff, maybe around 450 or so. And that's generally a pretty good speed for doing some of the weapon system testing, around 450 to 500 miles an hour.
So there's a regular flight pattern normally, but when you're doing some dogfighting and things like that, does that change?
Yep. For the dogfighting, it's just kind of wherever your heart takes you.
Where can it take you? How far out can it take you?
So we generally stay in the local operating area here. So the military operating airspaces, the MOAs, we'll go there for our training. So we're not going too far. But I have traveled back and forth between the squadrons. So our parent squadron is in Florida at Tyndall Air Force Base, mm-hmm. which is basically Panama City Beach. So we've picked up some jets from them and brought them over to us. They've brought us some jets. We've brought them some jets sometimes. So going cross country, across the U.S. Like I said, they can be flown manned anywhere. But when we're doing our local training, it's just kind of in the local area. We're not going more than 50 to 60 miles away.
Gotcha. So being a tenant at Hallam Air Force Base, that brings in manpower and of course, the air power as well. About how many people are involved in that capacity?
Yeah, so it's interesting, the impact that we have versus the size of our organization. The detachment itself is pretty small. So we have 8 people in the detachment. 5 of them are pilots, and then we have 25 maintainers that are contractors. Those contract maintenance guys are, of course, super important, because you can imagine these jets are fairly old. The ones that we have are 1985 tails here. The ones in Florida, they actually have some 1970s tails. But keeping those jets flying and working well, and the remote control operations working as well, our maintenance guys are super important. So of the 25 guys that we have that are maintaining these jets, most of them are retired maintainers, so they've been full career, in the military as maintainers, and then they retire, become contractors, and continue on. So those guys have almost 500 years of maintenance experience. So it's very helpful when you're talking about old airplanes.
You bet. You keep those babies flying.
Absolutely,
sure.
Yeah.
So you have the military manpower there, and you have a lot of civilian power as well.
Yeah. So of our 5 pilots, 3 of them are civilians, government civilians, who did a full career in the military, retired, and then got their civilian jobs continuing to fly. And then I also have a guy who is a retired maintainer who is now my maintenance liaison. He's also a government civilian. He's been around in the detachment for 26 years. One of my pilots has been in the detachment for 25 years. So again, lots and lots of experience is really helpful.
You have lots of experience. If you had to add it all up, and excuse my voice this morning, I got a sore throat, but if you had to add it all up, how many years of experience do you think you might have?
Yeah, so the pilot side, I think 116 years, and then almost 500 on the maintenance side.
Wow.
So it's super helpful, especially for a guy like me. I come in, I'm brand new, I don't really know what, what heads from tails as far as drone operations go. And so those guys have been very helpful in getting me up to speed.
And of course, a lot of these guys are former Air Force career people.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. Do you have any Army or Navy or anything in?
Nope, it's just all Air Force.
Yeah. I thought the neat thing yesterday with the Super Bowl was, out of the 4 pilots flying over for the Super Bowl, 2 of the ladies were from New Mexico.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
It's a school here in New Mexico. And I'm going, that's kind of neat, to have something like that happen.
Yeah, it was really cool seeing the flyover. And I didn't realize until this morning, kind of zoomed in, they had different, it wasn't all the same airplane. Normally on a flyover, it's all the same airplane.
Right.
They had a whole bunch of different ones in there.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
But yeah, kind of neat to have that kind of a talent to originate, being raised here, educated here, at least through high school, and then move on in their career and accomplish that. I was impressed with that. Well, if we take a look at the drone program, it did originate out of White Sands in 19...
So 74 is when they started doing the program testing out here. To kind of back up a little bit, so in the Vietnam War, the air-to-air missiles were not performing the way that they were expected to perform. So the Department of Defense said, hey, we need to be able to test these things, and we need to test them against fighter-style aircraft doing fighter-style combat maneuvering to make sure that these missiles actually work.
Right.
And so in 1973, Eglin Air Force Base at the test center came up with the drone concept. And in 1974, that program came out to Holloman. And so all throughout 1974, many test flights with the F-102 at White Sands Missile Range to figure out, hey, is this a viable concept? And sure enough, it was. They could fit them up with remote control packages. They were able to do fighter-style maneuvering. And so in 1975, the program took off between White Sands Missile Range and the airspace out there at Tyndall Air Force Base in Florida. They started doing these weapons testing against now the QF-102s.
Right. What is the difference between the QF and the F-102?
So just the Q means that it can be operated remote control.
Gotcha.
Otherwise, for the most part, anything in F, like the F-16, anything the F-16 can do, the QF-16 can pretty much do the same thing.
Yeah. So they're very usable for research and everything else as well. Am I saying that right?
No, I wouldn't necessarily say that. But as far as testing, you know, if you want to shoot a missile or do something where you wouldn't want a person in the cockpit because, you know, it's getting shot at by a missile, and but you want the airplane to do a high G maneuver or something like would be that you would see in a dogfight, you can make the airplane do that and try to see if the missile can handle it.
Yeah. It just impresses me because we're talking about flying, you know, targeting these drones, if you can call them, is that right?
Yes.
With a missile, I guess everything has to be so precise.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you release that missile, we got to know where it's going.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. There's lots of instrumentation and telemetry and optics and all kinds of things that go into these tests. You can imagine whoever is trying to figure out if this missile is going to work or not.
Right.
They have to see lots of different parameters and, you know, what can this thing do? And is the drone operating the way it's supposed to be? Is the missile operating the way it's supposed to be? Is it happening where it's supposed to be? And are we able to collect all the information on the backside to make a viable test? So lots and lots of intricate moving parts and pieces that go into a test.
Yeah. Once the missile makes a solid hit on that drone, does the drone travel much further or does it just fall towards the earth?
So it depends. Kind of standard Air Force answer there. It depends. A lot of times the missiles will not be outfitted with warheads. It's not important to make the drone explode. It's more important to see what the missile can kind of do at the end game there. But we have scoring pods on the airplane that can say, okay, the missile went this many feet away from the airplane, and yes, that was a kill, or no, it wasn't a kill based on how close it got. Sometimes there will be a warhead, and sometimes they'll blow it up. Sometimes the airplane will get damaged and will not be recoverable, and so we can blow it up remotely ourselves in case it's not landable or in case it's doing something it shouldn't be doing. We can blow it up. That's one of my jobs as the commander, is to push the button to blow it up. It's just kind of crazy to think
about.
To
destroy this baby.
But I guess that's why we're using old airplanes, right? But it's pretty amazing. You know, I mean, you take these jets that are still highly maneuverable, highly capable, and if you need to blow it up, you got to blow it up.
Yep. It's a good use for those old aircraft, though.
Absolutely,
excellent
use.
Saves the government a lot of money, saves us taxpayers a lot of money.
Well, because they're coming from the boneyard. So they've been mothballed. They get sent to Davis-Monthan. They're in the boneyard for however many number of years. So they're not going to be used for anything else. So it's nice that we can revive them. So that's our squadron motto, not dead yet. We're the zombies. So that's kind of a very appropriate squadron name, the zombies. We take the jets from the boneyard, refit them back up with these remote control packages. And as long as you got a good maintenance crew, which we do, these things can just kind of keep flying. It's pretty impressive.
Now, are these jets from the boneyard out by Tucson?
Yep, at Davis-Monthan Air Force
Davis-Monthan,
Base.
Davis-Monthan, yeah.
It's, if you've ever been out there, it's a sight to see.
It is.
So many airplanes.
Got a tour of that. Incredible.
That's really cool.
I remember, Colonel, my early days here in Alamogordo in 1977 when we arrived. I remember talking to someone, that was a long time ago, and they talked about one of the tests at, I believe it was White Sands Missile Range.
Hmm.
And the test didn't go exactly the way it should have. And one of the rockets that they were testing, whatever, came over reasonably close to Alamogordo.
Oh, wow.
But no damage, nothing happened in that. Those kinds of things can happen.
I guess theoretically, although that's one of the nice things about transitioning, because the previous program, the QF-4, transitioning to the QF-16, much easier to handle these aircraft, much less possibility of something bad happening. But we fly them over unpopulated areas. Right. And so over the range there, they have the self-destruct capability. If they lose signal, there's a place that it will just automatically go to over the range and hang out. Most of those road closures, I heard you talking about the road closures before we started. That's usually not us, because we normally fly north of 70 and south of 380. So for most of our missile testing stuff, at least for the QF-16, you're not going to have to worry about the road closures or gate closures or anything like that. But because of the orientation of the runway, when we take off and land, that will close the White Sands National Park. So obviously a big deal to close the park. So those tests happen pretty early in the morning, shortly after sunrise. We can take off and fly over the picnic loop there when we're flying unmanned, and then get the jet back before they need to open the park back up there. And like I said, stays on the boundary of the range. So when they're unmanned, you're not going to see them. And if something bad happens, you blow it up over the range. And so they're never going to get anywhere near where anybody could get hurt.
Now, you said you've been in Holloman about eight months?
Yep.
8 months? Where'd you come in from?
We were previously at United Arab Emirates in Abu Dhabi for the last 4 years, which was a really cool assignment. And lot more water over there. But there's also a lot more snow skiing and camping here than there is out there.
And you're in a good season for the snow, because we've had some pretty good snow this year around the area.
Oh, yeah. We've been loving it up at Ski Apache and Angel Fire and Sipapu. I saw Pajarito just open. We haven't gotten up there or to Red River yet. There's just not enough time.
I know. How old are your children?
I got a third grader and a second grader.
Are they skiing already?
They are. It is a bit ridiculous. They are already better skiers than I am. They've been skiing for this is the second season that they've been skiing. It's ridiculous.
Very good. They're enjoying the area as well.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, they love it. Very good. All right. What are some of your favorite spots to visit besides skiing?
So up in Cloudcroft, we take our camper up there and we go camping out in the woods. We call it boondocking. Or just go up in the woods, find a spot, hang out with friends, let the kids run around. The kids just love playing in the trees and walking around, and I don't know, they just find sticks and rocks, and the kids are having a blast, and we're hanging out by the campfire, and so we're loving the outdoor stuff.
Yeah, when our kids were younger, we used to camp up there a lot, and everything else. We'd go off the beaten track,
mm-hmm.
just try to get out someplace where there aren't a lot of people. If you got some privacy, build that campfire, roast the hot dogs, cook the steaks or whatever. But have a good time with your family and friends.
Oh, absolutely. And then we went to the Trinity site in October. Yeah. That was a really cool, wow.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
And the kids learned something from that trip.
Yeah, we didn't take the kids. It was a bit of a long bus ride, but yeah, they stayed home.
So you're a member of our Air Force and is really doing the right thing. When you come to an area, you're becoming a part of that area, not only yourself, but with your family.
Hey, yeah, absolutely. Being a part of the local community and getting out and exploring. I mean, there's so much more to do than we can even get accomplished in the time that we're here. But yeah, you know, get out, enjoy.
Yeah, I remember when I was in the other branch of service, Army.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Only enlisted for 2 years, but part of my duty was with the Armed Forces Radio and Television Service. I worked in public affairs, and the commander of Fort Greene, Alaska. One morning I was in there on the air. I did a morning clockwork show, and somebody's knocking at the side door, you know, and I open it up and, oh, yes, sir, come on. And he says, may I come in, Bob? I said, sir, it's your building. Come on in, you know, enjoy it. And off the microphone, we talked about different things, and he said, you always talking about getting out in Alaska. I said, I'm here. I might as well enjoy it. He says, how do we get these other people, these other guys, out of those bunks, out doing the same thing? I said, they got to want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
They got to want to do it,
yeah.
You know. And for the airmen we have at Holloman Air Force Base and everything else that do get out a lot, and we see them out a lot, I commend them.
Yeah, definitely. And I've been really impressed with the base in general. You know, as a tenant, you know, this the 49th Wing, we're not, you know, under the 49th Wing, but we've got a great relationship with the 49th Wing.
Right.
But I've been really impressed with all of the activities that they put on. The facilities are really nice, and you can tell that the leadership now and previous have put a lot of time and effort into making things nice and giving people the opportunity to enjoy the base, enjoy the facilities, get out, and all the trips that ITT and Outdoor Rec, there's a lot of stuff that they do to make sure that people have the opportunity, if they want to take advantage of.
Yeah, and the lifestyle for airmen at Holloman Air Force Base and enlisted officers, it's really changed out there. Because when I got here in 77, like I mentioned, Holloman wasn't up to date like it is now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's been so much growth and so much improvement.
Mm-hmm.
And when you make those living conditions more comfortable for our members of the military, you know, that helps strengthen what they're doing in that commitment to our freedom.
Yeah, absolutely. And not just the airmen, but their families too.
Families,
you know, as when everyone's taken care of, you're not having to worry about that stuff at home. It helps you do the job a lot better.
You bet. Colonel, any final comments this morning?
Well, I just want to say thanks for having me.
Oh, you're welcome.
I appreciate being able to talk about who we are and what we do. It's been really nice meeting you.
Welcome. Come back. You can come back anytime you want.
Sounds great. Thank you.
All right. Lieutenant Colonel Harris, thank you very much.
We are Active Radio, 88.9 FM, KHII Cloudcroft, 100.5 FM Alamogordo, and 102.3 KEDU Ruidoso.